Hello, my friends. My name is Lisa, and welcome to Creative in Process, a podcast where I talk with everyday humans on what it means to be creative in the 21st century. I'm a creative who's worked in journalism and marketing. I love to speak, songwrite, dance, blog. I love creativity because it fuels connection. So I've been excited to create this space where we get to explore together how being creative makes us more human. And in this first episode of 2023, we are chatting with one of my newest friends and fellow creatives, Brandy Bishop. Brandy is a content creator, event producer, streamer, and photographer at Brandy Bishop Photography. Her full-time work is in marketing, currently in the e-commerce space. To me, Brandy has one of the biggest hearts for finding and fostering talent and growth, particularly in the Boston creative community. She also has this irresistible knack for seizing opportunities that help her to stay curious and creative in every space of life, religious beliefs and political opinions included. Today, Brandy and I chat about things like marketing, TikTok, and the battle of remaining authentic when faced with online pressure, how generational differences affect the content we produce, what it's like to stream video games in post-pandemic life, how to balance creative side hustling with full-time work at a company, how gender dynamics impact our relationships, and how to show up in hard conversations about politics and religion. Brandy has a wellspring of energy and experience to share with us, so I can't wait for you to meet her. So without further ado, let's get to it. Brandy, you are the definition of a hustler, a jack of many creative trades. You do all things content for an e-commerce company. Sounds like there's a lot of video shooting, event organizing, infographic creation, and you're helping to produce a podcast, you're learning Reels, hacking TikTok, and seems like that's very much you. You're process-oriented, you love learning. So talk to me a little bit about this space and like what you've learned here.
It's honestly, one thing I've really learned is like, everyone is kind of winging it. I've just been given opportunities with like a program and it would be like, okay, learn how to do this. And without any experience, just kind of like going in and figuring it out. That has been like the best tool for myself, is like learning how to figure out an interface for a program really quickly. I'm learning about TikTok, which I kind of feel like a boomer on the subject. I'm not going to lie. So I'm still in the process of learning that. That's been interesting, figuring out like the trending sounds. I still don't fully understand the psychology of it and why people love it so much. Mm. I really didn't want to do TikTok because I was like, I don't know. I just feel like the content feels like super like junk food. It's like junk food content, you know? It lacks nuance. You kind of get like quick 30 seconds content. I like long form or like even like a 10 minute video. So it's been hard for me to like jump over that hurdle of being like, okay, well, this is the direction that media is going in. You kind of have to adapt or get left behind. So yeah, I'm adapting.
It's refreshing to hear you say that you are still a long former, even in a work capacity where you're very much working for somebody else, that's something that you're still feeling. I also don't understand the psychology of TikTok. I understand like the low attention span and like the young Gen Z stuff, but
yeah, it's definitely affecting people's attention span, which I think is what's caused my like inner animosity towards it, because I stream video games and I have a lot of exposure to like young Zoomers and like they're very short attention spans. And I think for me, I honestly think about the long-term repercussions of TikTok for people. I think that that's something that I can't help but feel inside. I've noticed like you can't get like a Gen Z kid to watch a video for longer than 5 minutes. We have like these like we call them after parties for my stream, and so I'll talk to a lot of people, like young Zoomers and older people, and like a whole, it's like a whole spectrum.
Yeah.
And me and like some of the millennials and like older Gen Xers and stuff, we'll be having a conversation and like a Gen Z person will be like, oh my god, like you guys just like stay on one subject for so long. And I'm like, it's called a conversation. Like they can't handle talking about one topic for like a long period of time. And it's so weird to me.
It's like, you still human?
I know. I'm trying to think of what was our, like, I guess MySpace, YouTube, I guess. There really wasn't anything like that when we were younger. So I can't comprehend.
Do you Snapchat? Oh, no. Because no. I try. I think that's my... TikTok is to YouTube as Snapchat is to Instagram, maybe. And I tried Snapchat for a while, and it just was not. I have the same feeling as you were talking about with TikTok, where I love that it disappears, and maybe that's good for some people, but I could never get into it. And it just, this entire movement of different tech and apps that are like really, really short form, really, really instantaneous, and then might go away forever. The quality, the nuance, the relational, conversational aspect is missing for me. Also, in response to what you mentioned with learning new platforms, I remember you mentioned when I asked you about your job that you said, you know, I love my job. And as a big part of that sounds like it's learning and just learning these interfaces and hacking these kind of new skill sets. Would you say that like the way that you get to work, which is creatively, trumps like what it is that you're working for, in this case, e-commerce?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I do think that being able to be creative and being able to learn new things is the most important thing for me when it comes to a job. So I used to manage a strip club and I did do some creative work for them. Like I was kind of a jack of all trades. Like you kind of just end up like taking on whatever needs to be taken on when you're managing a small business. And yeah, it was a completely, completely different space. The micromanaging, some toxicity too, which I think having any toxicity in a workplace just like, it like spreads. It's like a disease. Trickles down to everyone. Yeah. This was different. They trust my creative vision, I should say. They give me a lot of flexibility. They give me flexibility to make mistakes, you know? And that's really nice. I remember first coming to this job, and like it was like the first or second meeting, and my boss, we were like talking about some project, and I had an idea, and they were like, oh, that's such a good idea. And I remember my boss before, he would never tell me I had a good idea. Like I was like, oh my god, my boss just said I had a good idea, like what? Like, and I remember feeling so good about that because I hadn't really experienced that. That was really nice, having that kind of like affirmation, like, oh, this is what work's supposed to be like. You forget what's normal, because I worked there for like 8 years, so like I forgot what it was like to not be in that kind of like abusive toxic relationship with a boss, because sometimes you might not even realize, it might just be one person that's like super toxic. And I think that that's, if people are unhappy in a job, I think they need to like process why.
Yeah. This very difficult to pinpoint energy that keeps people in toxic, really dehumanizing spaces for years. Tons of people have this experience, especially in our culture where it's all about the productivity and moving forward in the grind. And that's the priority. And so everything goes to death for that priority. There's like almost no space to really just take a step back and think about your state of happiness. It's good to know that it sounds like you're loving your job now. And I'm also curious, you have a ton of stuff you're doing creatively outside of work. Was that stuff also in existence before you jumped into this e-commerce job?
So I've always had a lot of side hustles. That is kind of who I am as a person. So I've always done freelance photography. That's kind of been like the main side hustle since college. I started shooting at like dive bars and for like $50 and free drinks like back when I was 21.
Hey, it's not a bad gig.
Yeah.
Live photography.
So it's actually a pretty wild story how I started. So I always liked photography. I remember taking like a film photography class in high school and really enjoying it. And I always liked taking pictures, but I never had a DSLR. And then I was around, I must have been like 21. This other photographer, he was shooting on a boat. And I was actually having like a weird, like early quarter life crisis type of thing at this time. He asked me if I wanted to be a second shooter. One of the guys on the boat, he was like, I really like your photography. Do you have a camera like yourself? And I was like, no, like I don't have a camera. And so he got me one. He bought me my first DSLR. It was pretty wild. It's just like, I really like your work, and I feel like you need to like have someone invest in this for you. I probably wouldn't be doing photography if that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm a firm believer in serendipity, because a lot of things in my life have kind of lined up like that.
And it sounds like you kind of just see it and let it happen and take it and run with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which I relate to very hilariously so. I very peripherally met you because you were shooting photos for a mutual friend's birthday party. And I can testify that photography hustling, it really did pay off. Great photos.
Thank you. I wasn't getting paid to shoot photos on that boat. Like, I was literally just doing it for fun. Like, I was like, okay, like, why not? You know, like, sometimes it's just like going with the opportunity and seeing where it might be nowhere, but it might get you somewhere cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Streaming on Twitch for the first time during COVID. I know you had initially planned to just do it as a way to, you know, have some you time and relax, but then you realized you were quite good at it and you could do it as another side hustle. So then now you do regularly live stream. You mentioned last time when we were chatting that you're streaming Warframe. It's a free-to-play role-playing third-person shooter game. I had some vibes of the shooter game. No idea what Warframe was until I did my research. Sounds intense and also really involved and engaged. So I'd love to hear what this is like, how it was for you to start during COVID, and also how is it like for you now on the other side?
When I started, it was like the week COVID happened. I got all my stuff set up and I was like, I'm doing it, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to leave the house for a while. So I was like, it's time. Like, it is time. Really, I started and I had like 2 viewers, and then got 5, and then got 10, and then got 20. And then, like, you slowly, it's a slow climb. It was definitely helped me keep my sanity, because I was also going through a breakup. So it was like COVID happened. Was going through a very tumultuous breakup around the same time. And it was like the thing that like kind of kept me like sane, I think. Yeah. And meeting people from all over the world has been really cool. And from all different ages, demographics. That's been, I think, my favorite part. I have someone from Italy and someone from Iraq who's a doctor and someone from Australia. Like, there's just people from all over the place. And it was interesting because during COVID, I was getting like everyone's perspective on what was going on, because it was very different for everybody, you know, and what was going on all over the world. And that was really nice. There was like a level of solidarity being online together with a bunch of people that couldn't leave their house from all over the world.
Yeah.
So I'd like played a bunch of different games before I really landed on Warframe. I didn't start really playing Warframe till last year. During the pandemic, I could stream a lot because I was completely out of work, because all of my work was in entertainment. So everything was closed. None of my jobs reopened until May 2021. So I was actually making a lot more money because I was streaming 5 days a week, 9 hours a day. It was basically filling up the time that I would have had with my full-time job, because I was like, well, I'm not going to be idle. So I was actually making pretty good money for a hot minute during COVID. But then I kind of had to make a decision when we were starting to open up. I was like, do I want to just stay with streaming? Do I want to go back to like doing some side hustles? Do I want to go back to my old job? Honestly, I got scared. I was like, I'm scared. Like, what if when the pandemic's over, like, not everyone's going to be online anymore. And like, maybe the consistency of the income won't be there. So I was like, I kind of want something stable, so I'm not like dependent on this one thing. So now I stream less, probably 3, sometimes 4 days a week for maybe like 4 hours. And I don't make as much money as I did then either, but it's a nice side hustle and it supplements the income. This past few years have been wild.
Yeah. It must have been quite a decision-making process, making the good money on Twitch, but also not wanting to become dependent on a platform or a way of being online that may be less sustainable in the long term after COVID.
Yeah.
How is that for you, just stepping out of Twitch as many days of the week as you were doing and into sort of that stable e-commerce position? was that hard? Did you have to consult a lot of people, or did you just kind of put your foot down and go with it?
It was hard, but I kind of just went with my intuition. Twitch blew up. Like, it was big before, but like during COVID, it had its moment. I just had a feeling. I was like, it's not going to be this forever. Also, I could tell I was going to get burnt out. I still get burnt out from it sometimes. Like, I like playing video games, but like it burns you out to do it all the time, to be like in front of a camera entertaining people. Like, and that's like your sole thing. Like, you're live. It's not like a video that you edit and post up. Like, people are like there with you, interacting with you. And I do believe that there's an energy transfer. Yeah. And it can like drain you for sure. At the time, I think because I wasn't having any social interactions at all, yeah. I had way more energy to give. I think that now I don't as much. It's a little harder. I have to conserve more for all of the other things that I do.
I think it's really a great point that you made about the balance of energy, because you didn't have anything social in person during COVID. You sort of dumped it all into the Twitch platform. It just makes me think a little bit about the Zoom fatigue that everyone was mentioning. Even nowadays, there's just people actively running away and trying to elude Zoom because of how much Zoom had to blow up during COVID. The fact that it was so literally in your face, because people's faces were blown up out of proportion beyond how close they would be to you if they were in person. And whether it's a therapy appointment or, you know, a work chat or just to catch up with a friend, something that is so organic becomes very, very different when it's all virtual every day of the week. Especially, like you said, you can't edit your footage or your content when you're live streaming. I was talking to another friend who, she does VTubing and with a puppet instead of her face. And there's maybe less dynamic there with her needing to show up just visually and being energetic with the work that you do, gaming, the need to kind of be entertaining and show up all the time and accommodate everyone in the room. How has that experience been for you?
Yeah, people in my community get like upset, like if I take too much time off. They like really depend on me to be there. And that's really hard. It's been hard for me to like put myself first. And I didn't for a really long time. Like, I would just go hard and try to like give all my time to them. But then now I'm starting to kind of be like, okay, like I'm getting really burnt out and I can't, it's not sustainable for me to do this. Honestly, it's like endearing and like it makes me feel special that like they really like depend on my content, which is mind blowing to me. I'm like, why? Another aspect I would say is like I was drinking a lot, and I would like drink during streaming, and it got to a point where people were like, oh, like it's party stream, like they wanted me to like drink with them. And I understand that there's like probably a different energy level, like because I'm drunk, I'm like a little bit more energetic and bubbly and like all that stuff. But that wasn't sustainable. I was like, I can't be drinking all the time. Like, that's not healthy. It's also drinking at home, because you're not alone, but you are. And because I was drinking at home, I felt safe. So I was drinking more than I should have. So I had to like step away from that, because I could tell I was almost using it as a crutch, because I was like, they want me to be energetic, so I'm going to drink because like it'll give me energy and it'll make me be like peppy.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to keep doing that. And I did notice like I would lose people, you know, I would lose people in the stream, and people that would be clearly there because they liked the party atmosphere and they liked that I was drinking and like being goofy. And I was like, okay, well, I have to kind of like go back to being myself, and the people that like me for who I am will stay. So I think there is a lot of pressure for people to lose their authenticity. I always prided myself on being authentic, and like that's what I was like people like about me. I mean, drinking, it's like, okay, yeah, sure, that's not really me. And it's hard because you want people to like you, obviously. Like, you want your channel to grow, you especially when you see those numbers go up. And I've heard about a lot of other channels like doing toxic things for like to themselves because people in the community like it. Like, they like to see you do like outrageous things and dangerous things and stuff like that. Like, I heard of one YouTuber who would live stream and eat like a bunch of food on stream, and he ended up dying. Like, he ended up killing himself from like getting so overweight that he like ate himself to death, because his like demographic was like pushing him to eat all of this food. And that's like an extreme case, but there is a lot of that type of thing that can happen. You got to reel yourself back in and be like, I got to take care of myself first.
Yeah. It's so real what you're talking about. And I have just enough personality overlaps with you to like viscerally live through all of what you just talking about. Which, did that experience of party streaming and all the peer pressure, which is like a whole different world of peer pressure on Twitch, prevent you from thinking like, maybe I don't want to make it too big? Because once you make it so big and you're an influencer, it's just all that much more real and in your face, especially maybe on live streaming platforms like Twitch.
I honestly, like, I always said that I never really wanted my Twitch to get too big. I like the community aspect. And I think when you get really, really big, you don't have that anymore. Like, you're way more of just, like, a face. I like being able to have that, like, intimate experience with people and meet new people and, like, get people's different perspectives from all over the world. And we talk about all sorts of stuff. And I don't put, like, any restrictions on people on what they want to talk about. So we talk about politics, religion. We talk about everything. And I always say, I'm like, as long as you're not being like an actual bigot, like, I don't care what your opinion is. Like, everyone is allowed to have whatever political, religious opinions. As long as they're not disrespectful to each other, I want there to be like open discussions about these things. And also, it's nice because it like gives me different perspectives on what's going on in the world, because yeah. I'm not there. Like, I don't know. For example, like, there's one guy, he's a doctor in Iraq, and like, he works ridiculous hours, and like, he does not live in any way, shape, or form like how doctors live here. Not very wealthy. Like, you know, like, it's just wild to see the different frameworks, the different ways people live throughout the world. And we are so in our own box in the U.S. Like, we see things in, like, one perspective and, like, the way the media shows and social media and everything. And it's really nice to be able to just get out of that and just have real experiences with real people talking about their real stories.
Twitch, YouTube, what have you, any platform of choice, you could have such an interesting energy, dynamic, charisma to you that you could talk about industrial microwaves or zucchini bread or bad dad jokes. As long as you can bring people with you into that experience, especially since you've been in all these different transition creative spaces, what would you say to people who are wondering how to enter this world or just wanting to be more creative in whatever space they're actually in? How do we work on the way that we do it rather than what we do?
I feel like you just got to get out there and do it. And you have to be willing to make mistakes, and you can't be afraid to make mistakes. I look at photos I took 5 years ago and I'm like, oh, God. You know, like, you're constantly improving. And that's the thing when you're doing anything creative. Same with streaming. Like, I look at my stream a year ago and I'm like, oh, like, that's in anything that's creative. Like, you're just learning and getting better as you go. I think that that's what holds people back, is people are afraid to make a mistake. They're afraid because they want it to be perfect. They're afraid what people will think. You just got to let that go and just go for it and know that, yeah, you're probably, if you're an artist, you're probably gonna make some bad stuff. Like, you're probably gonna make some stuff that sucks. You kind of have to make the stuff that sucks in order to make good stuff.
Even though we logically know that it's impossible to be on all the time and be alive and have all the best cuts all the time, there is this pressure that still exists. No one shows the bad footage, or no one shows the 50,000 times that you didn't master that jump or that move or that joke. I think it takes a lot to be rebellious, knowing that there isn't a lot of precedent for what mistakes look like. And maybe live streaming helps that, because like you said, you can't cut your bad facial expressions out, or when you don't like what you said. Yeah. Have you found that this is helpful for you to just sit with yourself and just be like, screw it?
Yeah, I mean, I've always kind of been a screw it type of person, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, I think that honestly, the fact that I don't really censor myself, I guess I kind of just will be myself. You know, I think that there isn't a lot of that, even on Twitch sometimes. Like, a lot of people are editing themselves. I'm sure that there's people that don't like me because of that. Like, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that don't like my content because I am someone that is kind of more go with the flow, doesn't, not really censoring myself, worrying too much about what I'm saying. Like, no one's perfect and everyone is flawed and everyone says stupid shit sometimes. I think that there is this aspect of the internet that's putting people on like this ridiculously high standard. Like, everyone has to like be like this like fake person, you know, like the Instagram aesthetics and all of that, where like people are literally like cherry picking their like life for people to see. And that's just not real, though. I mean, it's pretty to look at, but it's still not, it's not real. There's definitely people that like that, but that's because it looks nice. There are people that are drawn to that content, and then there are people that are more drawn to something that's more authentic, mm-hmm. that feels authentic and doesn't feel like it's just being kind of like cutting the highlight reel of someone's life.
Yeah. I am so much of the camp that believes that surely the better part of humanity that lives in all of us, that can sometimes come out after we say the stupid shit or whatever, holds on to and is more attracted to in a like enduring way the stuff that feels more real. But maybe that's not representative proportionally in terms of the numbers of who shows up to the fake kind of pretendy streamers versus the speak your mind, be yourself, be authentic, be real streamers. But I feel like the sustainability of being remembered and of making an impact, like you said, it has to lie in the relationships and the community and that conversation that someone showed up and had with you the other night that they remember when they leave, that stays with them. If you were just a pretty face, because I'm sure like we could go into the creeper conversation about how many creepers have showed up in your room because they think you're just a pretty face.
They lose that real quick, though. Yeah. I mean, I mess with the trolls and like those people. So like they definitely exist, but I typically either ignore them or I mess with them. So my philosophy with people who troll is I troll back, because a troll is basically there just to get a reaction. That's like their whole purpose. And you just can't take any of that stuff personally and realize that it's all like people trying to get a reaction out of you. I go for more of like bro-y vibes. So I try to lean into that, like, which is easy for me. I have two older brothers. I've always been someone that's had a lot of guy friends, that gets along with the guys, that can joke around with the guys, that understands their humor without getting like offended, because I know that it's not serious. If they say something offensive, it's usually to try to get a reaction, and it goes over way better if you just make a joke back. And then they're like, oh, like if you just like make a joke and like make fun of them or something, it doesn't continue happening. And when I say make fun of them, I would do it in like a joking way, because I always assume what anyone's saying to me, I always assume that people are saying it in good faith, which I think is like the opposite of what most people do. Like, most people are always assuming that like someone's got malicious intent, and that person who, whether what their intention was, if they were just joking, they'll usually stick around because like, ah, oh, you're cool. Like, mm-hmm. you didn't instantly get offended or like get angry. You just like turned it into a joke, so you're cool. Or if there were someone that was trying to be malicious, they're like, oh, it didn't work, and they leave. Some people, their intention is just to test you to see like, are you cool, or are you one of those sensitive people that's going to like just get mad at everything? And then when they see that you're not, they're like, okay, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so, again, really cool. There's this kind of gritty, sarcastic, throw it right back at you kind of sass, energy, whatever you want to call it, broiness. When you first mentioned kind of the more bro-y stuff, I automatically thought, how's that working out for you? Because a lot of the time, I speak for myself and myself alone, because I, you know, grew up with a lot of guy friends, didn't have a lot of positive girl interactions at a young age, fell in with the non-gossipy, really jokey, bro-y sense of humor. At least the guys that I grew up around didn't really know what to do with the girl who looks like a girl, but is good at being bro-y, but is still a girl who looks like a girl. So I'm curious about that, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. It does make sense. So I have had that growing up, I would say, but not so much anymore. I'm like, there's like an internal masculine energy that I think I have that makes guys have an easier time at like seeing me in that way. I would say it definitely comes down to having really thick skin.
Yeah.
Because guys, at least a lot of my guy friends, like, they have ridiculous sense of humors, you know? And, like, a lot of guys, they joke around. And especially young guys, which is, like, I have a lot of that in my stream, you know? And these are all video game players. Like, a lot of them have, like, you know, that kind of sense of humor. It does come down to just having thick skin and not getting easily offended or shocked. Being able to, like, joke on that same wavelength, I guess, yeah. I'm also bisexual. I don't know if that has something to do with it. Like, I also, like girls. Maybe that has something to do with it, too. Girls are also different when it comes to, like, how we relate, in my opinion. We talk about feelings. Guys, when they are with each other, they don't normally talk about that stuff. But they're more likely to talk to that, to their girlfriend. And then when you're just a girl who's also their friend, and they can talk to you about that stuff, they start to get confused, and they're like, oh, maybe I like her. You know what I'm saying?
I just have endless interest in this topic, like the gender dynamics, because first of all, you never know what guys talk about when it's just guys, because by default, the moment you enter into that space, it's not just guys anymore if you're a girl.
Yeah.
And then vice versa, when a guy's curious about what the heck do girls talk about when they're alone? Because I don't see the cattiness. I don't see the gossip, you know? So I think it's just really interesting the way that those perceptions look for different people, especially yeah. like since you can kind of intuit your way into different senses of humor and things like that.
When guys are with a group of guys and they're all just joking around, I normally would say I think that like 90% of that, they don't even mean it. Like, they're literally just like trying to be tough or trying to look cool to each other, because that's how guys relate. I see it in like a lot of different artist space. Female competition, I guess guys probably have it too. I just don't know if guys go about it the same way. Girls are a little more insidious. I would say I've had harder times with girls. I have, like, trust issues when it comes to, like, girl friendships, just historically. Even on Twitch, like, there'll be, like, girl streamers who, like, just try, if they, like, get jealous of you, they, like, try to talk shit about you to, like, their community or, like, people that don't even know you. Like, mean girls stuff.
Yeah.
That stuff happens on Twitch. We're literally, like, in our 30s. Like, what?
Yeah.
It's, like, everything that's in real world, but, like, almost amplified a little bit. It's a little more in your face.
And it's not filtered. Like you said, it's yeah. all over the place and you don't know where it comes from. There's no context. I guess that makes it extra robust training for thick skin people.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like if you just exit yourself out of it, it typically like goes away, or you just don't hear about it anymore.
Yeah.
I just tried to stop paying attention to what people are saying behind my back and it doesn't affect you as much.
Yeah. In a lot of different spaces growing up, guys hurt me, but girls destroyed me. And I think part mm-hmm. of it was, I mean, the trust issues is definitely a side effect, but part of it, I think, was the passive aggression and the insidious, non-tangible, non-visible way that girls go about it. And I guess you could argue in some circles, it's cool to say that it's because they're more thoughtful and they can scheme and plan yeah. and more like
I know, it's like that's like the quality we have, we're schemers,
like we use right. all of our multiple gender intelligence for this purpose, like yeah. completely just undermining each other. For me, it's tougher when it's not communicated, when they don't come to you and say, hey, I'm jealous. I don't think I've ever heard a girl come up to me, creative or not, say, hey, I'm jealous, and that's why mm-hmm. I'm doing all this stuff. There's almost like it feels too much of a hassle for guys to keep things from you. And that's very much more the persona of what I'm getting from you. What you see is what you get. Like, I don't want to complicate things. If you care about me, care about me. If you don't care about what I'm streaming, leave the room. On this really gorgeously positive note,
yeah,
I wanted to talk about an actually gorgeous project that you have been investing in outside of your job, outside of streaming, called Cult of Art, this multifaceted variety show featuring visual art, mysticism, aerials, all sorts of stuff. But I want to hear your take on it and how you see it, as well as how this got started and where you see this project going in the future.
I wanted to create a place for people to have a good time that aren't just under the age of 25. Like, I feel like a lot of the events and spaces are really marketed towards like the younger generation. There's not a lot of spaces for like people that are a little bit older, but like still want to go out, still want to have fun, but don't want to just be in like a super loud, you're stuck like a sardine because there's so many people. Like, you want an experience. So that's what I wanted to create, is an experience for people. There's two sections of Cult of Art. There's what's going on stage, and then there's what's going on in the back room. On stage, we have aerials, comedy, burlesque, people doing handstands, jugglers, all sorts of amazingly talented people. We have live music. And then in the back room, we have people doing like tarot, palm reading, aura watercolors. It's kind of a mix between traditional mysticism and then some like just art mysticism is what I would call it. For example, one girl, she reads your energy and creates a music loop out of your energy. Really, I wanted to kind of mix the creative and the sacred, because I feel like the creative is sacred. Creating really beautiful, aesthetically pleasing shows that also kind of have like a slight mythical narrative to them. So I use a lot of Greek mythology. That's kind of what most of my shows are based on. So for example, during spring, we did one called Persephone in Wonderland, which was taking like the Persephone myth. Persephone's dragged down to the underworld. And then this last one was Circe Circus, which was all about Circe, who is another kind of witch goddess. This one we have coming up in February is called Aphrodisia, based on like the archetype of Aphrodite. So love, Valentine's Day, kind of using a lot of those kinds of tropes. I want to be able to go to an event where like I'm having so much fun, I don't even think about drinking. I'm just enjoying it so much that like that's secondary, because I feel like people end up like drinking a lot in environments when they're bored.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I kind of wanted to create something where that's not the main focus of the event. We have live music, but it's not super loud, so people can communicate with each other, because that's another thing I think is missing in a lot of environments, is that it's so loud you can't even talk to each other.
Yeah.
At least for a lot of people I talk to that are my age, like people do want to make new connections and people do want to have different experiences. And I basically wanted to create an event that I would want to go to.
Yeah. I love that. It's taking the things that you have experienced that are very important to you, turning it into a really multifaceted project. I thought it was really cool when you talked about boredom leading to drinking, or just like substance abuse, any sort of substance, because that is very true. But at the same time, lots of research saying that boredom can also inspire creativity. Just enough boredom, just enough idling around during COVID. And it seems like you took a lot of experiences. You literally used the words, I didn't want to be idle, so I started streaming. And you take these moments that you notice having a lot of time on your hands and finding opportunities to be creative and then create creative experiences for other people. That creativity is definitely a piece of it. But I also think the meaning for me makes a big difference. That seems to be connected to what you were talking about with sacred and creative go together. Because sacred is meaning for a lot of people, like meaning-making system. And that isn't often attached to creative things or projects, because some people really see art as just, like you said, pretty, or just, oh, like awe-inspiring. But they don't think about how to connect that to their meaning or their understanding of purpose. So I would love to hear you talk. Like, what do you mean by I wanted to combine the creative with the sacred? How does that sit with you with Cult of Art?
So not to sound too much like Jordan Peterson, I guess, because like I think that myths are important, like psychologically, especially because it's like a framework that I'm familiar with as well. I don't think that we have a lot of depth into anything spiritual. I think that like that is like a lack of meaning, you know, prevalent within our world, unfortunately. And so I wanted to kind of just give people a little taste in a fun way. That's why we also have comedy, which makes it like light, like it makes the mood light. The show itself is very comedy based, but giving people also the experience of having an ability to go have a different spiritual experience. Because there's, like, a whole variety of this. Someone that does I Ching, there's all sorts of stuff back there. So, like, you can really, like, go out of your comfort zone. It seems to be a very meaningful experience for people. I mean, I'm sure that some aspects of what we do is a little woo-woo. But I don't see it that way. I think you can kind of, like, you get what you want out of a situation, if that makes sense. Yeah. It also comes down to creating a space for artists to be able to kind of showcase their art and their creativity, which I don't think there's a lot right now. A lot of the Boston art scene can be very clicky. So I kind of wanted to create something that gives people that might not have the exposure, really talented people. I'll do a mini brag here. I'm really good at seeing talent. Some of these people have never performed before, like, in front of a stage. That's something that I like doing, is finding, like, new artists and giving them a platform.
That's huge. Having an eye for identifying talent and then having the time and the energy and the passion to uphold that and actually then go and empower them is really hard work end to end. If that's the heartbeat of Cultivart, whether Cultivart evolves into something else or you scrap it and go for a different project that does similar things, if that's the heart, I think it's totally sustainable. Boston especially, totally agree, needs that energy and that space. There's an unexpected, exciting passion that I think I share with you to build some sort of a cafe, bar, venue.
Yeah, artist collect, like, yeah. For artists.
Boston that Artist is... Collective, but with a much sexier name than that.
Yeah.
You have this by creatives for creatives vision to use a space like this to bring people in, have a touch point with the community, but then connect them with each other, and then also be a boss, unlike, it sounds like, your previous boss, that actually invests in growing the staff members and helping them foster their own passions to reach their own goals. I think I'm curious especially about how you keep this long-term passion and vision in mind, since you have so many things you're working on the ground day to day.
That vision of having, like, a space for helping fostering artists and even aspiring entrepreneurs has been, like, a thing deep within me for over a decade. Like, it's evolved and it's changed, but it's just been the dream. It does feel like I'm constantly getting closer to it. It feels like everything that I've ever experienced in my life has kind of been, like, building it up to even everything that I do right now, and, like, didn't realize that. I'm pretty, I would say, like, religious, spiritual. I have a strong relationship with God, though my perspective on it has evolved a lot in the past 10 years. I think that kind of helps me not, like, worry too much about how it's going to happen. When it comes to, like, cult of art, I really try to actually disconnect my emotions when it comes to, like, hiring people, when it comes to anything like that. I've noticed that some people will hire people because they like them. Because I'll have friends be like, oh, like, you should check out this dancer. She's a really good friend of mine. She's super talented. And then I'll see them and I'm like, I think that you are just really good friends with them. And you're not really looking at it objectively. I hire people for talent and skill. And whether or not I like you, that is completely separate.
That's very important when it comes to bringing people in. Like, it's a different story when you become friends with them after you objectively bring them in. Especially for artists who really need that platform, that bias totally messes with finding potential talent to really build something. Sourcing for diversity too, just in all sorts of different folks, because people tend to like the same type of people and they tend to be very similar to each other sometimes. So that actually, I think, brings in a wider net of talent too.
Yeah.
You mentioned faith and that it helps, helps all this. I definitely agree, like, that meaning, that connection, that purpose, that vision, the ability to see beyond the immediate. I think about the podcast that you mentioned wanting to create some sort of project around focusing on some of the most stigmatized and unpopular things ever, namely mm-hmm. religion and politics. I remember he said that connected to the fact that growing up, it wasn't very uncommon to openly disagree with a lot of your family members on really polarizing topics. Yeah. The fact that you seem like you have this vision and desire to bring others together in a similar way sounds really beautiful, because it's one of those things that if you don't put structure around it, we kind of just end up missing. How did the way you grew up, maybe your faith, inspire this passion to show up in these hard conversations and spaces?
So I grew up in like a very fundamentalist Christian household, and I fell away from my faith, I think, because there was also a lot of hypocrisy that I saw in the church, especially when you're younger. Like, you see like some bad things like in the church and you're like, oh, it's all bullshit. Like, you know, I think I kind of fell away from everything religious and spiritual. And then things have kind of evolved, but I'm a Christian, but like not in like the traditional sense, I guess. For me, a lot of religions are kind of saying the same thing in a different way. And they're almost like these frameworks that we use to describe a similar concept. People get really distracted on the details when it's beyond the details. Like, I think God's beyond all of that. With politics too and religion, I think people just get like so polarized with all the little details when really it comes down to like different value systems. Like, some people just value things differently than other people, and they instantly are like, well, you're bad because you don't think like me. Instead, we need to figure out like, okay, I want to understand why you think differently than me, and realize that it's not because they're a bad person. It's just because they see the world in a different way. And I think it's good to have those conversations when you disagree with people, because it helps you learn and it helps you challenge yourself. When it comes to faith, I think it's really important for people to find some type of meaning system. I do believe in a God. I think that that is important, because I think that when you believe in God, you don't get distracted by all this other stuff, because some people do end up making politics their religion. And then they have that emotional connection to politics, which is why people have such a hard time talking about it. I do think humans are inherently religious. I think that that's like weirdly biological. Like, so we inherently are drawn to kind of creating like spiritual narratives out of things. A lot of people are turning these ideologies into their God because they don't have one.
My experience in a lot of spaces is that God is too scary and out of control for some people, or a God, or spirituality in general. It involves too much faith in handing things over and not being in control. And so politics and systemic belief systems or whatever, it feels like you can kind of inject money and power and status into it and fix things that way yourself. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of people would be willing, and it would be easy for them to accept that actually they're sort of worshiping that instead of mm-hmm. being super in control of it. How would you go about helping people to put their guard down and be willing to listen to this kind of conversation?
That's what I'm still trying to figure out. I can talk to people in person and like can have those conversations with people. I think the hard part for me has been how I said I wanted to have like a podcast where we talk about these things. What's hard is for the people that aren't in the conversation, like the people that are commenting and the people that are kind of in taking what they want out of the content and kind of interpreting it in their own way. That's the scary part, you know? I'm still trying to figure that out. When communicating with people, I feel like it's just like coming in from a place of good faith. And you have to, hopefully, the people that you're talking to would know you well enough to know that you're coming from a place of good faith. Though I have been experiences where that does not happen and people get really angry at you and mad at you, because it's so easy for people to become righteous. It's like it is a feeling of righteousness. And I always say, like, there are certain people now that they think that they're so correct that, like, anyone that disagrees with them has to be evil. It's like that old school puritanical mindset of the Salem witch trials vibes. You can't let anyone question what you're saying, because that would make your entire, like, sense of self crumble, which is not good. Like, it's not good when your identity is kind of, like, pushed into that type of a belief system. People are putting like so much of their identity into these ideas that if people attack those ideas, it feels like they're attacking them mm-hmm. personally. And it's really hard to have conversations with people like that. Growing up, it was very common for us to talk about politics and religion. I won't say that I've always felt safe talking about religion with my family because I don't. But I have learned how to kind of like walk the line of being able to have these conversations without tensions getting too high. Even when it comes to politics, I think there's a difference between like having ideas and opinions, but being open to change. Like every political idea I have right now might be wrong. Like who knows? Like I think I know what I believe, but I'm totally open to hearing other people's perspectives and having my mind changed. And I think you kind of have to go into any conversation with that.
Especially, like you said, the identity, the personal history is so tied up with some of these larger beliefs. Maybe just expressing an interest in who they are as a person might help to really bypass the, oh, you are out to kill me and you are evil, defensive, yeah. super rigid response. Because we're human and we can't just like be married to an idea. There's got to be people and experiences and trauma or something yeah. beneath the thing that we're rigidly clinging to. And I would like to believe that it's definitely inspiring and fostering the open-mindedness to have your mind changed and also just genuine human interest breaking mm-hmm. through. It's refreshing hearing you talk about your own willingness to have your mind changed, even though you have so many things that you're invested in personally.
Yeah. Yeah. The more you learn about a subject, the more complicated it gets. The deeper you get, the more confused you are. Because you're like, okay, maybe I don't know, actually. Like, mm-hmm. It makes you kind of more willing to change your mind because you realize how little you probably do know.
This entire podcast is all a process for this topic that I'm calling quality of being. It's paired and partnered with quality of living or quality of life. But the being is so elusive and harder to quantify. So I want to focus on that piece. How do we better our humanity and become better as humans, even as we're bettering our lives externally and our culture and our societies? Just wanted to hear what your thoughts are about this. I ask everybody this question at the end. It's, I think, a perfect illustration of what you were just talking about.
Like the word being for me is like, okay, what is being? Being alive, being conscious, being human. I'm trying to like understand exactly what that means. But I think for me, how to have like a quality of being would be my relationship with God and continuing to create and learn and long term to help other people, other artists and other creatives in whatever capacity that I can. I do lean on God a lot. It feels like there's like a hidden hand like throughout my life that kind of just like shows me where I'm going. Because I used to be very anxious, like very anxious. I can have like dissociative panic attacks where I literally will dissociate, and I used to have them all the time. And I feel like as soon as I got closer with God and started to develop a relationship with God, I don't have them anymore, which is mind-blowing. Am I doing okay?
Yeah, you're doing great. The point of it is precisely because there is so much that you can take that word into, like even with living. Okay, we use that word, lots of contexts, but some people would argue, what is living? Like, is it being alive? Is it having physical breath? Or is it flourishing and making something of your life? Like, we can actually debunk that word too. With being, it's almost even more uncomfortable because it's like, what am I being? And that forces me to think about what is inside of me. And somehow there's a little bit of contemplation and silence that probably feels like it should be involved. And I think a lot of our culture is focused on avoiding that. Hearing you riff on what could it be and what does that mean to me? And you mentioned God and creativity and learning. And I think all those things are connected. I believe we were created to be creative. And I don't think there is a difference between a creative person or just a person, because there is no separation in my mind. But in a lot of people's minds, there is. And I love hearing people wonder and just externalize with this, because I think that's the point.
Mm. Yeah, I do believe, like, also when I think of God, I do think like there is an aspect of that that is creative energy in general, because like God, the intangible source of everything, you know, like that had to create everything. So that is creativity. That creative energy is kind of coming from that, in my opinion. I think quality of being also comes down to like finding your purpose as well, which I think is what everyone is kind of here trying to do. I think that for me, that goes back to like having my relationship with God, because it's like helped me figure out what my purpose is, which for me it correlates with learning and staying curious. Like I always call myself a seeker, seeking new information, seeking and creating.
Yeah. I was listening to another podcast recently, since that seems to be a hobby of mine now. They're saying how left brain is where anxiety and fear is housed, and right brain is where like curiosity and play and creativity is housed. And there's so much in our society that discourages creating beautiful things because we can't help it, even though that's part of who we are and what we gravitate toward. But we shut that down because we're 30 and we have 401ks or whatever. And that's really bad and like shortens our lifespan. The right brain is the thing that reminds us to be curious and to just poke things, because I just wonder what that is or what will happen when I do that. And there's this beautiful data point. As long as you have even like an ounce more of curiosity than you have of anxiety, it helps you tremendously to stay creative and to stay in that right brain area. And it doesn't really matter like how much more curiosity you have, but just the fact that you have just that little bit more. And I thought that was really beautiful, because it sounds like you live very much in that space of staying creative, staying curious, with the, I'm just going to find the next thing. And I have some form of belief and trust that that will take me closer to where I need to be or where I want to be. So I love that.
Yeah. So I still do have anxiety, but I feel like now I look at it as a tool, as something that actually like helps me. You know, before it was like debilitating, but now I'm like, okay, I'm anxious about this. And it's usually, it's there for a purpose. Like it helps me do like risk assessment, like for things. So instead of like fighting anxiety, which has been something that I've done like my whole life, just trying to fight this feeling that I don't want to feel it. Now I'm like, okay, I need to just feel it, go into it and figure out why I'm feeling this way. Use it to my benefit. So for anyone that feels a lot of anxiety like me sometimes, for me, I try to look at it as like an ally that I've learned how to tame. We're always trying to kind of fight against like our emotional impulses, you know, like, but they're usually there for a reason. So sometimes you just have to kind of go into it and figure out why it's there.
I 100% agree. And that is very challenging, but something that we definitely all need to do more of. Well, thank you, Brandy. Really enjoyed doing this with you. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I'm really inspired by Brandy's say it like it is, no BS attitude about being unabashedly herself. Whether through picking up a DSLR on a boat, streaming with no filters on Twitch, and flashing sass on the haters and the trolls, or pursuing projects like Cultivart. I think this attitude reminds us that if we haven't seized an opportunity to do something we can't help but be drawn to, the best thing to do maybe is just start. Snap that photo, sketch that mock-up, find the lyrics to that song, shoot that first take, and just be prepared to, well, suck at it. Maybe a lot, maybe for a while, but stay with the process, remain curious, and be okay with having our mind changed. So friends, take care of your passions. Honor the spaces in your life that sing to you. Take the opportunities you have to ask questions, be creative, and find people who care about and share those deeper things in your hearts. You can learn more about Brandy's work with Cult of Art on Facebook and Instagram via @cultof.art. Again, this is Lisa, and thanks for joining me for this conversation of Creative in Process. I'll have new episodes up every month, so be sure to follow and stay tuned. Also, I'd love it if you could leave me a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps me know what I do well and how to make the space even better for listeners like you. And Happy New Year, friends. Happy January. Stay warm, healthy, and I'll talk to you again really soon.